Welcome to the Veterinary Project Podcast, episode 019.
Welcome to the show created by vets featuring absolutely no pets. This is the Veterinary Project Podcast, hosted by Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light. Our resident veterinarians have swapped out their stethoscopes in favor of microphones to bring you the Veterinary Project Podcast, a show focused on real conversations, aimed to connect this amazing profession full of remarkable people. Through the sharing of collective stories and wisdom, and connecting over the many unique challenges we face, we invite you to join our community of veterinary professionals leading intentional lives. And now, here are the hosts of the Veterinary Project Podcast, Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light.
And welcome back to the Veterinary Project Podcast. Yours truly. You got Dr. Michael Bug, Dr. Jonathan Light here for another amazing episode of the Veterinary Project Podcast. Mike, how you doing today?
I am doing well. Great energy, Jonathan. Wow. You really
great
brought
energy. No, but I needed to bring something different.
I brought the thunder to the opening.
Hey, we got to do that, right? It's what makes this fun.
Oh, yeah. I always am looking forward to how is Jonathan going to start the introduction? What's going to come out of his mouth?
Oh, so much. And that was not good enough. I'll have to surprise you next time.
I'm looking forward to it. I want you to keep me on my toes.
I like it. Well, what's the life of Dr. Mike Bug looking like these days?
It's been a good week, I guess. Kind of quiet. I'm looking at some apartment deals. It takes a long time to land an apartment deal. So you look at a lot that don't go anywhere, kind of kick a lot of tires. So I'm just in tire kicking phase right now.
For the majority, I'm totally jumping in here. Here's where we're winging it already. For the majority, which is 99% of us that don't buy apartment buildings, when you say you have to look at a lot, what does a lot look like? How many deals do you have to go through before there's one that makes sense?
Oh, wow. So, I mean, it really depends. I'm at the point where I can look at high level numbers and cross it off the list in less than 2 minutes, right? And I look at quite a few of those. That doesn't take much time anymore because you just know that's not something I'm interested in. I have one that I'm working on where I actually went to the building, went through a few units, but it's still, there's so much back and forth with the vendors. It still may or may not go anywhere. Next time that I do officially put an apartment building under contract, I was thinking I'll probably shoot like a monthly video and just, because really everyone's like, what do you actually do? I always think of, what's that movie, Office Space, where the guy's like, what would you say it is you do here? And it's like, that's how I think people look at what I do. No one actually knows. So I'll outline it next time I land the deal.
Love it. Excellent. Well, in keeping forward with our episode today, which is going to be a really interesting one as we introduce our guest right away, before we do that, we need to move into the quick tip. What is our quick tip today, Mike?
All right. Today's quick tip. I am a huge, huge proponent and fan of vision planning, outlining, you know, what you want your life to look like. This episode is going to be coming out second week of December. We're heading into the holidays. So the quick tip for everyone is to take some time over the holidays. And I would encourage you to spend, an hour or two, look back at 2020, you know, reflect on it, maybe journal. You know, what went well, what didn't work. Obviously, there's lots to dive into here with COVID. And then take some time and look at 2021. And I'm not talking specifically about goal planning, right? I know a lot of people will set goals, and that's part of it. With vision planning, it's more, you know, what do you want your life to look like? What does it feel like? What's a day in your life like when you wake up? You know, what are you thinking? What are you feeling? Where are you waking up? And really get into that and capture that. And I'm thinking sometime I should do whether like a Zoom thing or something on it, because I keep diving deeper and deeper into this every year, and it gets very powerful with helping you take your life, you know, in an intentional direction. So anyway, I'll stop rambling there because that's not very quick, but the quick tip: carve out some time, reflect on 2020, vision plan 2021.
We're going to be looking for a 5-minute video on how to do that for all of us that are not as in tune on how to vision plan, which is, I think, many of us, myself included. That's excellent. Thank you for the quick tip. And with that, we are going to introduce our guest for today, who is Dr. Greg Andrews. Dr. Andrews is an equine veterinarian who's practiced in Southern Alberta for the last 35 years. Until recently, he was the CEO of Moore Equine Veterinary Center, the largest equine practice in Canada. He's currently the president of Mosaic Veterinary Partners, a mixed animal group of practices, and he chairs the board of directors of Innova Partners, a successful veterinary software company that services complex veterinary practices worldwide. He has been the past president of the Alberta Veterinary Medical Association, as well as the Western Canadian Association of Equine Practitioners. Additionally, he has served on advisory boards for both the University of Calgary School of Veterinary Medicine and the Western College of Veterinary Medicine in Saskatoon. He currently resides in Tata Creek, British Columbia, with his wife, Gail, where he pursues outdoor activities, competition, while enjoying his grandchildren and continued business pursuits. We have a fun episode and conversation with Greg, where we dive into his start in mixed animal practice before moving into the racetrack world, and his evolution into building Moores with his partners. We talk about what his motivations were, the hard parts, the working long, long hours, before we jump into the state of veterinary medicine in 2020, as according to Greg's perspective. We look at the changing roles in veterinary medicine, corporate medicine, work-life balance, or onto the work-life balance rant. You'll hear that from Greg. He's not afraid to say it. And then we jump into technology. Greg has a great love and interest based on needs within veterinary medicine, and we go into that world a little bit. So without further ado, and to stop Mike and I talking, please enjoy this conversation with Dr. Greg Andrews. Greg, thank you very much for joining us today. This is a special day, I feel, as one, it's our last recording of 2020 with a guest, and who better than to have on Dr. Greg Andrews. Greg, you and I get to work on almost, if not multi-day basis right now within Mosaic Veterinary Partners, which is fantastic. So very thankful for you to be able to come onto our podcast and share your journey and share the discussion that we're going to have over the next few minutes.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. I'm excited and humbled to be here. Appreciate you offering.
So this is really interesting because in setup for this conversation, Greg wasn't sure if he was going to have enough to offer to being one of the guests on here. And, you know, we're going to put him a little bit on the hot spot today. And in the pre-recording, he was joking us that he's been grilled by a lot harder. So again, we're just going to start right into it. Greg, tell us a little bit about your journey. We've read your bio out for the listeners ahead of this being recorded, and you have an amazing journey within the veterinary industry. You continue to evolve. Tell us a little bit about the starting grounds and starting off in mixed animal practice and then moving more into equine practice and how that's how that evolved.
Yeah, sure, Jonathan. Sure will. So I guess my journey started, after I graduated. I did take an internship at University of Pennsylvania at New Bolton Center. It was a large animal medicine internship that focused mostly on bovine, to be honest with you. Probably cut about 75 LDAs. We did them on their back at that stage of things. Was a great experience for sure, and met lots of absolutely amazing people. New Bolton Center was a pretty high-ranked school at that point in time. Moved back to Alberta into a mixed animal practice in High River, a practice that doesn't exist anymore. And mostly it was mixed animal practice. I did 95% equine and bovine. Enjoyed that. I was really enjoying the bovine side of it. A lot of cow-calf stuff. There was a very large population west of High River there. Got into some feedlot work that I really enjoyed and almost took a specialty in feedlot medicine at that point in time. But the there was a bovine crash, it crashed in the bovine sector economically, big time. My boss sent me into the racetrack. And, you know, as they say, the rest is history. I did have some experience with racetrack. My father was always an advocate of it and actually managed some racetracks in southern Alberta as well. So I left that practice after 3 years and moved into a practice with more Rock Atkins and Chalik, it was called at the time, in a little tin shack down by the stockyards that aren't even there anymore in Calgary. It was a very, those were the three other partners, four of the partners were amazing veterinarians and still are. And, you know, we worked hard, we did bovine and equine. So I did bovine at night and weekends and racetrack every weekend and most nights and stuff. It was, I did that for 11 years, enjoyed it. Got to touch a lot of animals.
I bet. You know, I bet.
And the thing, you know, you hear, you know, Gladwell talk about, you know, having 10,000, you know, repeats to do something. You go through that pretty quick at a racetrack. And people, there's kind of some negative connotations to racetrack practice. Just like anything else, you can do it whatever level you want. And so I got a lot of basis of my equine experience just by touching horses.
Do you think that is possible in 2020? Again, we're veering off already. Do you think touching that many animals, getting that quick of experience in the 10,000 hours that you described from Malcolm Gladwell is possible in this day and age?
There's very few chances to do that. I would probably look at 25 horses in the morning, palpating them for different reasons and stuff. So unless you went to a racetrack, I don't think that can be done anymore. But that was it, you know. Interestingly, you have all these elite athletes and this crammed into these areas, and you really can't do a proper examination. You can't trot them, either because there's no good place to trot them. Can't trot them outside because the trainer doesn't want to see anybody else to see the horse's lane, you know. And so you have your fingers. We definitely before ultrasound machines, you know, and that was I levered off that a lot, and because I had to go by touch, and it was an amazing experience. Very hard. I literally was putting in 80, 90, 100 hour weeks back to back to back, and it was hard, and that's why I got out of that. So towards the end of that, I got a couple of veterinarians because I was doing both standardbreds and thoroughbreds. And then again, that totally different population of animals and people. And again, standardbreds are amazing animals. I'm passionate about thoroughbreds, but I admire standardbreds, how tough they are. And so I got some people hired to come in and take those two practices away and started doing some performance horse work and reproduction work at that point in time. Started mostly south of Calgary in the barns there, and really enjoyed it. Different set of challenges. Again, was lucky enough to be able to work on some. The thing about equine practice is that you see your clients every week almost, and so it's a relationship game. And you have to, and they don't switch vets quick because it's a trust related thing. And I was still doing some reproduction then, doing a lot of standard bred, you know, shipping semen, all that sort of stuff, and had so lots of experience in that. Did that for probably another. I did the racetrack practice for about 11 years, and the performance horse for probably another 20 to 25, and then I kind of started to phase into management after that.
And so describe for us that point at which you took all of that experience, all of that leadership, and now started managing both people resources building as you started to build up more equine? What did that look like and what was the motivation behind that?
Well, it was probably not a well planned out vision, to be honest with you. I'm not going to say what that, you know, when we moved out of the little tin shack, as I called it, up to our current location, which was well north of Calgary at that point in time. You know, that was probably the biggest thing that started to shift it from bovine to equine, and it absolutely took off.
I remember you saying you guys weren't sure if you were going to be able to cover your lease payments in that first year.
Yeah, and almost the first week we've kind of said, "Holy cow! Look what's happened here. Treasures just started to roll in, it was quite amazing." And I mean, the vision was, you know, it's not just mine. I mean, again, yep. I was lucky enough to have extremely good veterinarians working with me that were, as I call, the full meal deal. You know, they had the technical skills, they had that curiosity, but they worked hard and they had good PR. I mean, they were the full meal deal, and that's what kind of makes it. And we were not afraid to go out and go to people's farms, and at night we rarely turned people down, and it was the service aspect as much as the technical aspect that built the practice.
And was that something that you guys consciously chose for when you were choosing to recruit your veterinarians? Was it something that you were saying, okay, this person has it, this person doesn't have it, or this person has three quarters of it and we can teach the rest? I ask that because a lot of people have that, I want to call it self-deprecation, but that feeling that they're not good enough in 2020, that they can't do it, when we have to help them even see it in themselves that really they do have it there. How did that work through the early days at More Equine?
We probably consciously, we probably chose background and work ethic over ability at that point, you know, ability at that point in time, and then tried to have them develop their area of expertise. So, I mean, at that point in time, most veterinarians were male. And kind of a joke was, we like Saskatchewan farm boys, you know, because they knew how to work, they were practical, and usually pleasant to work with. Now that's, again, there was very few women in the field at that point in time. But so it was reasonably, but you're right, that's what we consciously went towards. And you know, some people self-regulated and moved on. That didn't fit the mold, and so one of the things we did is from the very early stages is, even when I first went there, I was paid a percentage of gross revenue, mm-hmm. right off the bat, and that was, it was cold turkey. It was not, there was no safety net, that, you know, that weeded people out that didn't want to do that were afraid to have to go out and work and did it. So that was, you know, and that has changed a lot. Now, of course, we absolutely give them a safety net, but I think in general it allows people to get compensated for working hard and doing a good job. And if you don't do a good job, people won't call you back and you won't get paid. It goes hand in hand.
Yeah, it's such a debate. We could spend a whole episode just on that between the three of us, let alone in the debate of what pro sal salary production. And yeah, that's a big piece in veterinary medicine and continues to be. Yeah. But for those drivers that want to produce and know how to produce, there is money to be made. There's no doubt about it. And I don't think that's a scary thing to say to people.
Yep. And I think levering on that, just getting into that a little bit, Jonathan, I think the thing that scares people away from that is, you know, about sharing the duties and somebody, you know, taking all the gravy and stuff. And we just made it real clear. We just made it, you know, that this does not happen. You look after your partners, your associates first for yourself. If everybody does that, nobody has to worry about it. And the whole time I was there, I do not recall that being an issue, but it was talked about up front, you know, and so it can work in even in a large organization.
I agree with you. Yeah, it has to be at the top of mind as well too. And the right culture has to be in place as well. When you left Maury Quine, you were CEO there, top of the game, largest equine practice in Canada, if I'm not correct?
Correct, yeah.
What were some of the highlights of that journey to get there? That's a big achievement. That's a long journey, a hard journey. What did you enjoy about that, Greg?
I think what I enjoyed was being able to pivot and do these different aspects. You know, at one point in time, I was doing all the surgery there before we had real surgeons. And loved that. Did tons of arthroscopies. I would do three a morning back then, coming off the racetrack, and a lot of throat surgeries. So I mean, I really enjoyed that. But then after I've got a short attention span. Once you've done 100, you know, carpal arthroscopies, I got tired of that, okay, and started to move on to other things. But you know, I think just be able to have that diversity and do different things was the greatest part of it. And just watching it grow, and it was difficult because, you know, that was before time when we had, you know, when I was more or less running the practice with my partners and still, you know, top grocer, it was very difficult, and I didn't do a very good job on the management side, and that's why I started to pull away from the work. And at that point in time, we were able to attract some excellent, you know, surgeons, you know, Dr. Scott and Dr. Madsen, and some internal medicine people. And goodness sakes, so why would I be stumbling along, you know, doing what I did when you had people of that ilk?
Excellent, excellent. What did you find most difficult within that journey, in terms of, was it the management, the people, the addition of resources needed? Again, when you're looking back at it now,
you know, the resources were less important, you know, because we to be honest, I mean, we went in, we were a frugal bunch. We built that place very, very low cost. Again, one of my farm boy partners, Dr. Gibson, built that thing with some racetrack guys. And I mean, it was amazing what could be done back then. And that really helped that we weren't burdened by debt. And it was certainly the HR part of it was probably the hardest, especially when you start to get, you know, 20, 30, 40 people involved. And probably we weren't advanced enough in our thought process to bring enough people in to do that level of management. I think we were still had that practical farm boy attitude about being able to do it yourself, and that was probably the biggest challenge I had.
Okay.
We had.
Yep. All right, Mike. Anything before I transition to a different portion?
Yeah, I kind of want to jump back a little bit. I was taking some notes here back to the racetrack, 11 years, kind of 80, 90, 100 hours a week, you know, and you mentioned seeing clients where the relationship builds and you're seeing them every week. How do you stay the course? Like, what keeps you motivated? Because that's a lot of hours every week for over a decade. So I'm curious, and I'm also curious, you know, personal, like, life, did you have a family? Do you have kids? Like, how did you balance that kind of going through that transition?
Well, I probably, the smartest thing I've done in my life is pick the right wife who basically was a head nurse in a big ward in a hospital. She quit her career to raise our kids because it was obvious that I was not going to be around there to help. And, that was probably the biggest reason, but you know, it was you know, partially the duty of being the responsibility of those animals. You know, when they were racing on a Saturday or a Sunday, you know, you basically had to be there. You didn't have to, but wanted to be there to, if they broke down, if there's problems, that they had to be scoped. And you really get caught up in the whole industry. So I think those are the things that drove me. So it was smart.
Really smart. I want to change directions a little bit and look at the state of veterinary medicine in 2020 from Greg Andrews' perspective. You're right in the middle of it right now. You've seen the evolution, whether it's been gender-based from a male-dominated industry into what now is a female-dominated industry, the change in roles, corporate medicine. We discuss work-life balance. There's a lot there to jump into. One of the questions in the pre was, you know, Greg Andrews' rant on life-work balance. And I think that's really important when we're looking at 2020 from your perspective. You've been able to see a lot. What do you think of the state of veterinary medicine in 2020? The pros and the cons, the goods and the bads.
Well, certainly there's lots of pros, Jonathan. I mean, I think the work that's being done on every species of animal has just progressed so much. And it's just, it's huge. I think clients are getting such good value. Maybe not every day, but every time, but in the vast majority of cases, and with the technology that's come along and the specialization that's occurred, and occurring, that's certainly one of the positives. And I think one of the positives is more females in the profession. And I think having, you know, all male, you know, testosterone driven aggressive veterinarians out there, which what it was like, wasn't healthy and too combative, too competitive, and so it was good that more females came in. I mean, I think it would be nice to have a closer balance myself. And I think almost everybody I've talked to agrees with that, but that's the positives of it. I think, you know, the negatives, I'll throw largely back at my generation. Is, you know, we have because of, you know, subsets of how I worked and, you know, hours and stuff and expectations. You know, for the longest time, you know, we expected everybody to do that. And I think there was and sometimes still is a bunch of grumpy old men that are trying to interact with this, with a new generation. And they can't do it very well. And it's difficult. And that's hurting the profession. And I think, unfortunately, I think driving a lot of the young veterinarians, not just young females, young veterinarians, away from different areas of practice, and you know, back into, you know, industry or whatever, and you know, some people might even go into real estate, for God's sakes, I think that's the negative, because I'm not going to throw it on the current generation. I think what has happened, and it's just a fact. It's not you know, I used to work all these hours and somebody else comes in and wants to work, my God, only wants to work 40 to 50 hours a week. All of a sudden you've got a deficit automatically, right?
I do.
And so, you know, that certainly has driven the obvious problem we have that everybody knows about, which is the shortage of veterinarians.
What about competency factors in specialization? You've seen the evolution of specialty. You mentioned it earlier and how that has guided better medicine. But at the same point, from a generalization of veterinary medicine, what you used to do and that width of knowledge and competency, it's no longer there. If we're being honest, there's a lot more that's being referred into specialty centers. I'm speaking more specifically the small animal side, but even on the mixed animal side, it's also happening. Do you see that as a pro or con?
Well, I see it as a con. You know, I think there might need to be a balance again. That might be something that might need to swing back, and I think the specialists should. I think that the specialists have to start recognizing that, that there might have to be some swing back. If we're going to keep people engaged in all the phenomenal things that can be done in veterinary medicine, like we can do so much, but if all these absolutely brilliant people that are going into veterinary medicine now get stuck doing frontline medicine and that's it, they won't stick. And we need to have them stick. And that's one of the reasons why I like mixed animal practice in the more rural settings. You know, you have more of a chance to do that and really develop some of these skills. And then if you wanted, you can go back and do specialties later. But I think that's a bit sad.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. And there's an ongoing debate that this will only get more specialized, being our industry over time, based on both the education and knowledge that's coming out, where competency levels are for early grads. And then again, from specialty centers, of which I've the opportunity to partake in, that are just getting that much more niched, and clients are asking for it too. So that's a whole different area as well too. Tough, very tough.
I think it is. I think it's a bit sad. And again, unfortunately, I think that has to be a realization by and driven by the specialists, both outside and inside the institutions, to start to recognize that. And that's something that I have a pretty strong opinion about.
Yeah. Let's jump a little bit and speak corporate medicine. You've been involved in a very large independent. You've had the opportunity to sell practices. You are now involved in a mixed animal corporate setup. Tell us your thoughts on corporate medicine in 2020. Again, you've seen the evolution from non-existence to what they are in this day and age. How do we, and we being, two of the three people on this panel right now that are leading in a mixed animal setting right now, how do we continue to foster for the growth within veterinary medicine when it relates to both veterinarians, support teams, team members in a corporate setting that's only getting larger and larger? What's your perspective?
Well, I mean, I think corporate medicine in general has a firm place within the profession, no question. But is it going to take over the world and take over veterinary medicine? No, I don't think so. I don't think it should. I think there are some extremely good independent practices out there, more equine being one of them still, and that can stand on their own 2 feet and have got that to practice at a level. I think, but corporate medicine does have a place where transition is not going to happen, can't happen, or cannot happen as well. Just like anything else in life, not everything is the same. Not everybody has the same level. And I think most of the corporates that I know of still try to practice good veterinary medicine and progress the level of care to patients. So that's hard to argue against, and they have the resources, the expertise in-house sometimes to help with that. And, it's really hard to argue against a group that's trying to make more patients better. So I think there's a place, but there's a balance. I don't know where it's going to end. I think some of the when it starts to get into a more of a financial game, I don't agree with that.
Oh, very fair. Mike, before we go on to next, any comments, questions?
No.
Greg.
What's that? Sorry.
Drill down for Greg.
No, I appreciate that. No, it's so interesting you have 35 years experience. You've seen so much and such an evolution. So I'm just sitting here kind of taking it all in. The thing I get so curious about is sort of the evolution of the people aspect of it, how veterinarians want their career to fit within their life, and seeing that evolution and how that ties in with or without corporate practice is the thing that kind of fascinates me.
Can I jump into my work-life balance rant?
Please do.
I think work-life balance should not be spoken in those terms. I think it's a BS phrase that people use as a cop-out. Okay. Now, A lot of people think that I'm just a grumpy old man, but that's not the case. The part that I don't like about it is the work part. So when you go into veterinary medicine, you go in there and you go in there for a reason or some reasons, and usually it's a passion for animals or a passion for science or a passion for surgery or research. It's a passion that you either have or you develop while you're in school. Somewhere in school, and I'm not blaming the universities themselves, but somewhere they come out and they start calling it work, okay? But it shouldn't be work. It should be, I like to call it life balance, okay? So, I don't care whether your veterinary part of your life is 20 hours a week or 80 hours a week, you know, that's different for each person. But when you go to that 20 hours or that 80 hours, that should be part of your passion and part of your life. It should not be work. And I think, because I see that, and people start, you know, looking at their watch 5 to 5, and you know, that's not what it should be. It should be dragging you out of there, you know, at 5 o'clock. And I'm not saying people have to work harder. I just think when they're there, they should be able to enjoy it. That's why I hate the work-life balance part of it. Not that I think everybody should work 60 hours a week. Far from those days are over. People should not do that unless they really want to. And that's why, again, I'll throw it back at my generation, is that, you know, we didn't allow that to happen. We brought a new generation of generations into the profession, gave them a truck and some keys and a boy box or a stethoscope and a thermometer, and let them at it, and didn't have the mentorship or the support, and all of a sudden it became drudgery, and that's really sad. That's my work-life balance rant.
I'm looking at you, Mike.
Oh no, it's great. My obvious question then is, like, thoughts on, so, like, how do we move out of that? Like you said, drudgery, you know, how do we sort of support and mentor to move it away from that sort of feeling, or, you know, terming it as that, to bring the passion back?
I think good question, Mike. And I've thought a lot about that. And I think it's the profession itself, whether it's the regulators, you know, the VMAs, or especially the universities, I think people have to start talking about things more positively than all the problems that are out there, and warning people about every absolute negative thing that could happen, and not having them. I think teaching people to enjoy the little gifts that are given to them every day. Every day, every practitioner that's practicing, when you go into an exam room or you go into a stable, people say, "Mike, how are you doing today?" They're glad to see you, you know. And when they leave, 80% of the time, 80 to 90% of the time, "Thanks a lot, doc. That was great." You know, and every time you get a little shot of endorphin each time. And we actually get, I used to say, we got addicted to it. And when I left clinical practice, boy, I missed those endorphin shots. Whew. But then that's that 10, 20% that bog people down. They don't slow down enough just to enjoy that little millisecond of respect that we get. And it's innate. It's ours to lose, not ours to gain. Mm. You know, when we that's because, you know, as the old saying goes, you stand on the shoulders of giants. There's been so many veterinarians out there over the years that have done all that work and all that background and set that up for the new generation, and it's still there. Yes, there's pushback on prices and this and that, more than there used to be, whatever. But I think we have to enjoy the little gifts that are given to us every day.
Fully agree with that, and love those comments, and love the back and forth between the two of you. Excellent. Greg, as you look at your career and the evolution of it, in this day and reading your bio, you are still highly involved more on the technical, or sorry, the technology side now than you've ever been. Tell us a little bit of whether that was a hobby that's now turned into a passion, which is now turned into a portion of your career. Is it something you stumbled into? I'm curious as to how you've gained the knowledge to where you're now chairman of the board, working with these different companies, wanting to continue to learn and expand. Curious to know where that comes from and really the why behind it.
Well, maybe because I'm lazy, you know, because when I was crawling under so many horses, I was working hard, I was doing bills till midnight and past, and just I started to realize how much money was falling off the table. When I was in the racetrack, I probably forgot to bill as much as most people would bill, and realized that I have to start to work smarter, and I got tired of you know, not just, I wouldn't say not making enough money, because that wasn't the case, but just seeing things not done well. And the only real answer to that was technology. And it kind of started by one of my best friends, John Grindy, classmate of mine, took his MBA, and he was the perfect example of somebody asking the five whys. Everything, he was challenging me all the time on stuff, and how can we do this? How can we do this better? And the two of us just kind of ratcheted it up, and that's when we started our software program in More Equine, so we could run that place better. And that's probably what started it off. And then I started to see what could actually happen. It was transforming to me. So that was the law. It was not a planned thing. I was not a techie person. I didn't have one of the first computers or anything like that. But it started from there. And then once we went into a commercial organization and selling the software, I started to see what other people were doing and what's out there, and the possibilities, and just got, I guess it's that same clinical curiosity. Okay. Started to kick in.
Yep. And I've seen you in action, you know, as recently as last week in a demo, and you know, it's still fully there. You're digging. You want more. You want to see what it can do. You want to see that full evolution of whatever that technology is.
Yeah. And I remember 15 years ago when I was just started to, you know, have a programmer program stuff for me. I wanted to be under a horse with a headset on, being able to dictate into the headset as I was working, because we didn't use text as much back then. We were more, which was stupid. Why it took me so long to figure that out, I don't know. But anyway, those are the sort of things I started to think about. And I'm the kind of guy that when I drive up and down the road, I don't listen to news or music. I just think about stuff that can happen.
Now you're listening to podcasts like the Veterinary Project podcast.
I do.
Like, Jonathan, you got to get better. Don't put me on here. No, that's really good. And that's something I think I really look up to, is both from the evolution of what's possible, seeing a need and filling that need and not just complaining about it. That's definitely something that I've come to very much respect from you in the short time that we've worked together, is you're not one to complain just to complain. It's okay, this needs to get fixed, and if nobody else is going to do it, well, damn it, I'm going to do it. I'm pretty sure I've heard those direct words out of you.
Yeah, my father didn't let me bitch.
No, I can understand that.
He gave me a kick in the ass and said, go do it, go do something about it.
Yeah. Yep, sometimes we all need that kick in the ass. Excellent. Well, I hate to bring this to a close so quick, because I have a few more questions I want to, you know, get into, but Greg, we might have to have you on again, because we're already at our time. I just looked over and and we're there. So, Mike, any words of closing before we move into a different round?
No, it's great. I mean, I appreciate so much having someone on with so much experience. And the thing I highlighted the most is that piece you said about how it's innate, it's ours to lose, right? Like recognizing those small moments in the day and having gratitude for it. And that is so true. That was very good.
I agree. Well, with that, we are going to move into our impact round, which is a series of short questions of which you get to answer at your free will. And the first question is, Greg, are you a cat or a dog person?
I am like one of your last ones. I have transitioned from a cat person to a dog person. And I know this is a cat group. I didn't tell you that ahead of time because I thought about, you know, actually, I think these guys actually screen people ahead of time, so only cat people come on.
Don't tell us our strategy for 2021. Don't tell but, people.
No, we about 5 years ago we inherited a grand dog because my son was going off to get an MBA and just it was phenomenal experience. Yeah, so I'm a dog guy now.
You're a dog guy now. That is too bad.
Yeah.
True or false? I knew I wanted to be a veterinarian since I was a kid.
False. Yeah. I stumbled into veterinary medicine. With what I was strong at in high school, I should have been an engineer. All my buddies in high school were engineers. But my older brother was in agriculture at U of A, and he was having so much fun. I'm going to go be an Aggie. And that was my only motivation. And got up there and somebody said, you know, you got pretty good marks. You ever thought about being a veterinarian? I said, no. So anyways.
The rest is history.
So I got in after 2 years and went. So.
Excellent. How would your friends describe what you do for a living?
But they usually don't describe it. They just usually just shake their head. They more ask, why are you doing it rather than what are you doing? But most of them don't know, especially my two or three, four different jobs. But just business stuff, I guess would be.
Business stuff. And I've seen you in action that way on that business stuff. What is your favorite hobby?
I have two hobbies. I can't separate: cross-country skiing and mountain biking. I'm a low-impact exercise, thrill-based person and love it. And that's why I moved out to the beautiful Tonto Creek.
With a big race coming up in the new year.
Yeah.
What in this world are you most grateful for?
Well, you know, I've already given my wife kudos and my family for putting up with those, you know, stupid hours, as most people would call them. But probably after that, my clients. I mean, as mentioned, you know, I've just had such phenomenal clients over the years that have put up with me. And because back then, you know, one thing we didn't talk about is mentorship, because I literally had none and had to pick and choose and scratch. And, you know, so they allowed me to make mistakes. And early in my career, especially, and you know, just had some phenomenal people that put up with me. It was amazing.
Love that. That's a new one for us. Really love that. So, Greg, as we come to a conclusion here, if people wish to reach out to you, want to ask questions, learn more, join Mosaic Veterinary Partners, who would they reach out to? What address would they reach out to, or where would they find you?
Yeah, I think I have no problem people emailing me at, you know, greg.andrews@mosaicvet.com. And no problem at all. I love talking to people about veterinary medicine. Could do it all day and all night, really, for that matter.
Yep, that is the case. So as with all of our guests, Greg, before we come to a conclusion, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it. As I mentioned in the pre-call, you know, there's a lot of areas that we could go down. You had an amazing career, something that I look up to, Mike, from an experience standpoint, and just the jumping points that you came into. Really appreciate it, because there's a lot of words of wisdom within there. Yeah. Thank you. About it. Excellent. Well, with that then, Mike, any words of closing too before I
jump? No, just thank you, Greg. Thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, enjoyed it.
So the conversation ends with the last word going to you. What message do you want to leave for the veterinary community?
I think the message hinges off what I said earlier about enjoying it. I think there, I mean, obviously there's lots of factors that are in play with veterinary medicine right now, a lot of stressors and, you know, but I think we have to keep it to the basics of trying to enjoy it and enjoy those moments. And I think if you do that, if you allow yourself to get those little endorphin boosts, a lot of other things will go away and you'll be able to, and hang in there till you get it. I mean, is it hard? Yes, it's hard, but it's attainable because the level of commitment and the level of intelligence that people are coming into this profession with can overcome anything if you just put your rational brain on and you know, allow, I should say that's a bit negative. Just allow yourself to utilize your skills to get out of the difficult problems and enjoy. It's great. That's all.
Thank you for listening to the Veterinary Project Podcast. As a recap, on behalf of our hosts, the Veterinary Project Podcast will be releasing new episodes weekly. So be sure to tune in as we bring you more conversations aimed at helping you enjoy a life well lived. If you enjoyed what you heard on the show and you want to stay in the know, please like, love, and or subscribe to the podcast on the listening platform of your choosing, as we're available on all the usual suspects. If you know of others that may benefit from these conversations, we'd love it if you please share the show with them, as this will help us grow our community to reach more and more veterinary professionals. Speaking of which, if you are a veterinary professional and would like to get connected with more like-minded individuals who are joining us on this journey, please send an email to theveterinaryprojectpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll invite you to be a part of our private Facebook group. General feedback, requests for information, or perhaps requests to be a guest on the show can also be sent to theveterinaryprojectpodcast@gmail.com. Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light, thank you for listening to the show, and we'll catch you again next week for another episode of the Veterinary Project Podcast. Bye for now.